Good day, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, January 20th, 2026. The first story today from the front page of the Commercial News is titled Grant Money Needed for New Businesses. And this story is by Christy Jankowski. Bringing in new businesses to Danville after the departure of Hyster, Yale, and Quaker Oats Company will take grant money and zoning changes. Logan Kronk, the Community Development Administrator, said the Economic Development Administration, or EDA, grants will bring businesses to Danville during the Public Works Committee meeting last week. The grants up for council consideration include the U.S. EPA for the Brownfield Community 9C Wide Assessment Grant, and the DCEO's Illinois Regional Site Readiness Program. It is still the city's intent to make sites shovel-ready for economic development, Kronk said about the areas the EDA grants will be used. There's several sites at that location that are 50-plus acres, Kronk said about the West Newell and Bowman Avenue site. There's hundreds of acres that, with infrastructure, they can be developed. This discussion follows the recent approval by the city and Vermilion County to expand the enterprise zone, further supporting business development efforts. Kronk said the grant is projected to be between $1 and $1.5 million with a 20% match. Alderman Ed Butler questioned who owns the land. So we're going to continue to build, Butler said. So you said all those acres belong to farmers, or do they belong to the city? Kronk said the plan is to rezone the agricultural land to general industrial. Mayor Ricky Williams, also present at the committee meeting, said the main reason they are rezoning the land is to get large businesses to come to the city. A lot of the places are wanting larger parcels of land, Williams said. So if they want 50-plus acres, we're limited on where we can put them right now. So we're trying to secure this money from the state. They approve 80% of it. We do 20% of it. The other EDA grant discussed is connected to PepsiCo and focuses on site development related to large-scale opportunities. The $5 million grant will have a match of 20% like the other, which is also to be used for development purposes. Now, this project is to remediate the floodplain that is located on Quaker Oats Company's former site, said Heatcraft, Kronk said. It essentially splits the sites that will never be developed on with this floodplain currently in place, Kronk continued. Essentially, what this funding will do will allow for close to 100 acres of developable ground with all the utilities already on site. For this particular project, Kronk said city engineers designed around 90 to 99% of it, and once it is complete, they will apply for it. Williams said the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity is standing with the city. They're fully behind Danville and this. You know, especially after this, the Quaker Oats and Hyster Yale situations, that they're really rooting for us to be able to have these funds so that we can make these sites ready. Both grant approvals are on the City Council agenda for Tuesday night. Our next story from the front page is titled A Bridge Too Far. Ford's message highlights MLK ceremony. And this story is by Marvin Holman. Danville. Bridges can either fall short, tear apart, or don't reach as far as it can go. What Reverend Dr. Dwight Ford of Grace City Church of Rock Island said on Monday is that the bridge to any common ground has gone too far. Most people know the phrase, a bridge gone too far means there is overreach, Ford said. Anybody that is sensible and rational can look at this present-day reality and see that we have gone too far. But the challenge is how we can create a bridge that can go further in the right direction. What happens so much is that we are fed information that is polluted and problematic and meant to keep us in odds with each other, so a small slither of society benefits for our dysfunction. When people are in crisis, they tend to see each other's humanity a lot better. I think finally we are at a point where we have to consider our humanity over our citizenship. People want to know how to treat you based on a party or a citizen. The whole argument about who belongs here is a 14th Amendment problem. They are trying to reconstruct or deconstruct the inclusion of people in a way that makes citizenship very narrow, and we have to widen our tributary. Ford, who is also the president and CEO of Project Now, a social services organization in Rock Island, was in Danville to give the message at the community-wide celebration service for Dr. Martin Luther King at St. James United Methodist Church on Monday. It takes planning. I heard him speak at another event, and I thought he would be an excellent speaker for the event, MLK Celebration Committee President Sandra Finch said. I am very committed to make sure that the King Celebration is a success, and it takes time. We have some great members in the committee that believe in Dr. King's dream and what he stood for, and those members are special people in this community because they believe in Dr. King's vision, and they want to continue it in the community. After a welcoming speech from St. James pastor Dr. Don Jackson, the yearly $6,000 scholarship grant was given to Schlarman Academy senior Miles Crosby. It's an honor and a blessing, and I appreciate being handed this scholarship, and anyone could have gotten it, Crosby said. I just wrote from the heart and wrote what I believed in with my moral system and what my father taught me. Crosby read his winning essay in front of the audience, which included his making a friend of a classmate was not talkative to start, but Crosby was able to open the classmate up. He also was enamored with Ford. It's amazing to see everyone support me and to be presented the scholarship, Crosby said. Listening to the speaker today brought a lot of insight and brought a lot of motivation to more. Listening to him made my whole day and whole week, and he brought some things up that I can take away and focus on in the future because you don't think about them until they are brought to you. Danville senior Tim Long won a $1,500 grant from the committee for his essay, which was a close second to Crosby's. I was blessed to be recognized for anything. The graciousness of Jesus gave it all, and it was pretty nice to be recognized, Long said. I have known Miles from basketball, and he's a great kid. To share with him is great. It is more than an honor to share it with someone that is great. To see all the people support you is great, and it is great to see the community together for this event. Following musical selections from the MLK Ensemble Choir, an introduction by East Central Illinois Community Action Agency CEO Odette Hyatt Watson, and a solo by Brenda Brown, Ford stepped up for the final message of the day. It was the second time Ford has been to Danville, and he has liked coming here along with all the other cities in the state. I think the world of the city. I have had the chance to meet the people and some of her, meaning Finch's, team members, and what matters most to me is the people that occupy your time and space, Ford said. I am more of a collaborator. So when I meet certain people, I think how I can connect them from here to Rockford, and from Rockford to Rock Island and Springfield, because there are people doing great work separated and segregated from each other. With racial tension building up, Ford said that people's lack of humanity needs to change. When enslaved Africans were here, the reason people treated them bad was a lack of their own humanity. But they processed it through citizenship, Ford said. Because if you are not a citizen or not a human, then what are you? 2/3, 3/4, a 3/5 of a person? They start with these ragged distractions of how to parcel out humanity. Whether I am 1/2, 3/5, 2/3, it allows you to determine how much humanity you are going to show me. In the 20s and 30s, when the Statue of Liberty's arms were wide open and people all over the world came in, it is funny that the same people that are narrow in their understanding of humanity and citizenship had grandparents who were on those ships coming in. The only indigenous people are Native Americans. It is funny how you get in the house and the door slams behind you as if it is your house. This is not your independent home. This is our home. Unless we find a way to express our humanity in different ways, you're going to see this tension continue to boil up. Ford also said that calling people names gives the person saying those names a comfort instead of a challenge. I know what nasty names can do to allow you to exercise the highest level of violence against another person, Ford said. You can't kill another human being if you see him like you see yourself. If you see him as scared as you are, you have to give him nasty names. Every conflict we were in, we gave the opponent a nasty name because it would have ripped our consciousness into pieces if we saw them as human. In our final story from the front page today of the commercial news is titled, City Plans to Purchase Vacant Properties. And this is by Christy Jankowski. Danville. Preparation is underway for the city to acquire vacant houses for demolitions and training. The Danville City Council will consider purchasing properties being auctioned off at the Vermilion County Trustee and Vermilion Advantage Surplus Auction today and Wednesday. Logan Kronk, the Community Development Administrator for the city, informed the Public Works Committee of the city's intentions during the meeting on Tuesday evening. It's very challenging, if not impossible, to bring contracts prior to the auction or an address list to the city council, Kronk told the committee. I just wanted to let you know that it is our intent to attempt to pull or acquire properties off the list prior to the auction. The city uses various grants to demolish properties, including those that allow the Danville Fire Department to use vacant houses for training purposes. We're not going out and buying vacant lots at will. They will be in areas where we have actual plans behind, Kronk said. He added that they were confirming what properties the city can pull. We went through the list, and there are 55 properties that we have identified, Kronk said, adding, the properties that follow the East Main Street corridor, as well as a few in the Madison neighborhood. David Rue, Director of Public Works added that the city has to own the properties it uses for demolition and training. We can't do those demolitions without owning the properties. So we utilize the grant funds to demolish these properties, Rue said. If they're properties that are in areas of redevelopment, we'll maintain ownership of those until we assemble land, such as in the downtown area. Kronk clarified to the committee that the lots the city buys will not be a part of their side lot program. There is a plethora of vacant city-owned lots around the city that the city is currently selling through the side lot program, Kronk said, adding that one can find more information about that program on the city website. We are, just to give you a basis of timeline here, Kronk said, typically we put in for what the city is either eligible to pull off the list or when we do place bids and win the auction for certain said properties, the contracts will come a couple of months later. Kronk added that the city council will have a formal time to consider the properties on the list. Yeah, what I tell the staff is it's time to reload the hopper, Kronk said. We're so efficient at demolishing glided structures with grant funds. And that's the end of the front page stories for today. Now we're going to turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, January 20th. And the first today is for Lillian Flowers. Lillian D. Flowers, 86, of Georgetown, died Friday, January 16th, 2026, at Accolade Healthcare of Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street in Danville. Albert McNutt. Albert McNutt, 76, of Danville, died Saturday, January 17th, 2026, at the VA Eliana Healthcare System in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Robison Chapel at 103 Douglas Street in Catlin. Margarita Charm Payne. Margarita Charm Payne, 91, of Hoopston, died Sunday, January 4th, 2026, at her daughter's home. Cremation rites will be accorded and a private family service will be held. Anderson Funeral Home at 427 East Main Street in Hoopston is handling the arrangements. And that's the end of the obituaries for this Tuesday. Now we're going to turn to the sports pages for a story by Marvin Holman titled Beating the Clock. Danville. The Vermilion County Tournament started on Saturday with a new feature. With the IHSA going with shot clocks next season, some of the teams saw their first time with the shot clock, while others have already experienced it this season. The St. Joe Tournament used it, and the Monticello Tournament used it, so we played 9 games out of 21 so far this season with the shot clock, Oakwood coach Jeff Mandrell said. We like to go up and down fast, but a team like Salt Fork likes to slow it down, and that's an adjustment for them. The Comets took advantage of that for most of the game and went on a 44-35 win over the Storm in the first game of the tournament. We got a little space and penetrated and made some shots, Mandrell said. They had some foul trouble, and they are always aggressive defensively. And they're hard to score against. You hope to have some turnovers and some open space, but we didn't do that a lot during the game, so it becomes a slugfest. Carson Dudley had 26 points to lead Oakwood, while Jathan Perez had 10 points. Braxton Clem had 8 points for Salt Fork, while Weston Church added 8. Thanks to the 3-team A pool, the Comets will now wait until Thursday to take on top seed Westville, who will play today against Salt Fork at 8 p.m. "We are going to practice 3 days before playing Westville," Mandrell said. "We haven't played them, and they are very good. We're going to play to win on Thursday, and that's what we try to do every time we come out." Armstrong Potomac coach Caleb Gossett said, "I challenged the guys in practice. We didn't play as well as we could against Bismarck last week, and we had to get to work on Wednesday. We had a good week of practice, and Friday was the best one we had all year." Luke Townsend had 19 points and 10 rebounds for the Trojans, while Ryan Edwards had 12 points. Reese Showalter had 7, and David Franzen added 6. "Luke's our guy. He's had some performances that he would say were not his best," Gossett said. "He was good on defense, but for his standard, he was disappointed. He had to get his mojo back, and the county tournament is a perfect place under the big lights, and I was proud of him. He was all over the place, playing defense, passing the ball, scoring. He was our guy tonight." The Trojans had experience with the shot clock in December as part of the Kankakee tournament. "The Kankakee Holiday Tournament had shot clocks, and we installed shot clocks at our gym," Gossett said. "Some people are not a fan of it, but I love it because it keeps the game going. Some teams can't take the air out of the ball and stall the game. It keeps the game even." Nick Cardenas had 13 points for Hoopston area, while Allendyce Barnett had 10, and Braden Walder added 7. After playing Georgetown Ridge Farm today at 5 p.m., the Trojans will face Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin on Thursday. AP hopes to get revenge after a 74-54 loss last week to the Blue Devils. "We have not beaten them since 2011. It was the 30th straight in the series," Gossett said. "They won it and I won it, but it is going to be a massive effort. Kyson Peoples is doing great, and they have a great supporting cast. Coach Gary Tidwell is a great coach and is going to take a Herculean effort, but we are going to focus on Tuesday because any team can get you in this tournament, and we can't look past them because it would take the sails out of us." Gossett said the team's move to tougher tournaments have paid off, hopefully for this one and in tournaments in the future. "We want to keep this thing rolling. We have played tough teams, and that is paying off," Gossett said. "Our guys have faced big competition all year, and that was with regional and the county tournament in mind. We come here, and everyone plays higher level, and we have had to get ready for that. I'm proud of the way they kicked it off tonight. It was a great team effort." In the final game of the day, the defending champion Blue Devils defeated Georgetown Ridge Farm 63-28. Peoples had 20 points, while Mike Tidwell had 11 points, and Reed Zarate added 10. The Blue Devils will return to action today at 6:30 p.m. against Hoopston area. Next, from the local pages, we have a story titled "Illinois Medicaid Program Faces Looming Funding Crisis Due to Federal Changes." And this story is by Peter Hancock from Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. A multi-billion dollar budget crisis will hit the state's Medicaid program in the next few years unless state lawmakers and Governor J.B. Pritzker act to prevent it, budget analysts both inside and outside the state government warn. The crisis comes from changes in federal Medicaid policy that were enacted last year as part of President Donald Trump's sweeping domestic policy agenda, known officially as H.R. 1, or the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which, among many other things, slashes one of the main funding tools many states have used for four decades to fund their share of the cost of Medicaid. By the time you're a few years in, you're looking at a $4, 5, 6 billion a year hit, and that's material. Paula Worthington, a researcher with the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs, said during a recent interview. Worthington is co-author of a recent IGPA report that describes the upcoming changes in Medicaid funding as one of the most serious long-term fiscal challenges facing Illinois. The funding tools at issue are known as provider taxes. Those are special taxes that states levy on hospitals, nursing homes, private insurance plans, known as managed care organizations, or MCOs, and other kinds of health care providers. States levy those taxes, usually on a per-patient or per-bed basis, and put the money into a fund that is used to draw down federal matching funds. The combination of state and federal funds is then used either to enhance Medicaid reimbursement rates or make direct payments to hospitals and nursing homes that serve large numbers of Medicaid patients to help sustain those facilities financially. When Medicaid was first established in 1965, it was a relatively modest program that provided health care benefits to people who already qualified for other kinds of public assistance, with costs split between the federal government and the states. As both the size and cost of the program grew, however, states began looking for new ways to pay for their share of the cost outside of their general revenues. Provider taxes emerged in the mid-1980s as one such mechanism. By the mid-1990s, Congress began putting controls on state-levied provider taxes. Those included rules that they be broad-based and uniform, meaning they had to apply evenly across an entire class of health care providers and not just those that served Medicaid patients. The idea was that states were prohibited from holding providers harmless by assuring them they would get all their money back, and then some, once the federal matching funds were drawn down. But the federal rules also included a safe harbor provision. States could avoid having to comply with the hold harmless prohibition as long as their taxes amounted to no more than 6% of net patient revenue. That rule has effectively served as a cap on what states can levy in the form of a provider tax. But that cap is about to be cut nearly in half. Under a provision of H.R. 1, a provision that only applies to states like Illinois that expanded Medicare and eligibility under the Affordable Care Act, that 6% cap will gradually be cut starting in fiscal year 2028 until it reaches 3.5% in fiscal 2032. In fiscal year 25, according to the Department of Health Care and Family Services, Illinois spent a total of $33.7 billion through its Medicaid program, making it one of the single largest categories of expenditures in state government. Of that total, $20.9 billion, or 62%, was federal money, while the remaining $12.8 billion came from state funds, including both general revenue and provider taxes. A recent report by the nonpartisan health policy research organization KFF points out that Illinois stands to lose more than any other state when the reductions take effect because it is the only state whose hospital and MCO assessments are both above the 3.5% threshold. And that takes us to the end of our time for today, Tuesday, January 20th. Again, my name is Greg, and as always, it's been a pleasure to read for you, and I hope that you have a splendid day. Take care.